Welcome back to Toys on Tap. This week is a rad week with someone that has come, gone, and come back again, Mechavirus, doing insane customization of soft vinyl toys in crazy ways. You've seen some of the stuff come up with Ophelia and Mark Nagata, and it is insanity how good his work is. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. It promotes this show to more people, which then lets us do more things, and it's so rad. If you want to jump on and support us in another free way, follow us on all socials at Toys on Tap. And if you want to support us even more, patreon.com/toysontap. For $3 a month, that's where you get extra stuff, and I love putting it up there. Now let's jump into this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Dude, I'm pumped to have you on. I do some kind of like deep-ish dive on every artist before that we bring people on, and I was told to come find you from Mark.
Nice.
And
I kind of got a heads up.
Okay, good. And I'm pumped. I don't know what it is about Mark, but he's got a hold on me because he's super kind. We've spent, spent like 14 hours together just filming in his house and eating meals together and stuff. So, anyone that he was like, you should talk to this person, got moved to the top of the list for sure. And I went through, and your painting is unreal. I have so many questions about it, is where we're going.
Cool, let's go. Okay. Just real quick though. Yeah, Mark is such a pinnacle of helping artists just like get their wheels going almost, you know, like he's always there to really help like emerging people. And I'm talking almost probably 2 decades ago, we linked up. I mean, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
But one of the nicest, most generous, like compassionate, all those kind of that those words, descriptions, you know, apply to him. So
yeah.
Big shout out to Mark Nagata. Thank you so much for me personally too. And I'm glad that he's like, you know, you're chasing that now. And it's like,
yeah,
journeys, man. It's so great to follow the journey, you know?
Yeah. I'm a super big fan of him. And the hope is that he's a fan of us.
Yeah.
I came to this
really funny thought about Mark the other day, right?
Yeah.
Like he's such a nice, generous dude, but like he made scary images that like instilled like fear and discomfort and younger children. And I'm like, that's so, like we looked at all those books as kids and we're like, our imaginations just went crazy. And it's like, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, he's making child's horror books, you know, like he's a horror movie director almost. But
I will say it is crazy when we were filming one of the parts that we did two YouTube videos with him, interview style, and one is like, I think it was called like Making a Monster. So all about Izon. And the other one was him going from illustrator to toy designer. And one of the crazy thing was I had to like pause everyone because he was like showing us the Goosebump, like the original drawings and illustrations. And I was like, we got to pause here. Like I'm having a real ass moment. Like the person that I read as a kid, like those books, is now standing in front of me telling me like, look at what I did. And it's like, I remember seeing those books when I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And so it was like, now I'm in your house. Like maybe let's pause real quick. I'm going to have a reorient my brain before we continue.
Yeah. I'm impressed that you were even able to think like with all his collection around you. I'm like, it's literally, you start to talk to him and then your eyes wander and you're just like, what were we talking about? Cause you're just layers deep, like so many pieces that you'll honestly probably never see in your life, you know, like, it's unreal. Unreal visit at so many levels, you know?
Yeah. But hey, we love him, but this is about
you.
Let's go. Every episode the same. Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Todd Robertson, Mecca Virus, coming out of Massachusetts, just south of Boston. I kind of want to say I'm mainly known as a customizer. I do have my own vinyl out. I do some of my own resin little sculpts, but mainly it's the painting and the whole Mecca Virus aesthetic is what I'm known for. I kind of was doing it for almost a decade straight. I kind of disappeared for about 4 or 5 years, transitioned, tried some different jobs. But like I just couldn't get away and I had to come back to really what was making me happy. So I'm kind of like Mecha Virus 2.0 right now. It's kind of an interesting reassessment and jumping back in. But yeah, in a nutshell, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. You have been in the toy scene, even with that break, you've been in the toy scene longer than most of us.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of stuff and it's like amazing the
What up, toy nerds? This is Ray.
and Dave, go check out our brand new YouTube channel, The Toy Rats.
We make toys.
We talk about toys
We talk about old toys
and new toys.
and toys that we make.
And we're just a bunch of goofballs. It's a good time.
We make fun of Dave a lot.
Hey, I'm all right with that. So yeah, if you get a chance, go check out Toy Rats on YouTube. You won't be disappointed. You might be.
Yeah, you could. Who
But
knows?
you gotta check it
Anyway,
out.
Toy
Toy
Rats,
Rats.
YouTube.
Bye.
Bye.
The transition that like has been going on and just over the years and I'm blown away. I mean, right now you have literally people doing DIY kind of pulling in their own studios. I never thought I'd see anything like that, you know? A lot of people have access to the factories and have taken total advantage of that. And there's like so many amazing Sofubi pieces or vinyl pieces or however you want to define it now out there. Which was I think the biggest change from like when I left and just jumping back in recently is that all you artists out, it's like amazing that you all have your own figures. Everyone is crushing it with like original solid produced factory figures and it's amazing. I'm really impressed by that and I one of the biggest changes, you know, I've seen.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, starting even in the last like 5 years, starting there was this thing where it was like a tight-knit secret, factory stuff. And I remember early on, I just didn't want to ask for anything. And I reached out to a factory probably a couple years ago or a year ago and took a shot and I was like, hey, this is like, I'm hoping this works. Reached out to the factory, made contact, produced, the work came back great. And now we are in full production, like helping artists create stuff and creating our own stuff. And it's bonkers. How, like, once you get in with a factory, how tight knit that little thing is until inevitably they're like, yeah, we have a bigger order or something.
Yeah, I think it even if you jump back to kind of the original like dream to kind of actually be producing in Japan, the layers of steps and connection between parts that is not the same in kind of other factories, the challenges, the hurdles just become like astounding to some people, you know. It's like, why would you want to keep doing this? And you're like, I don't know. I love it too much to
Addicted.
stop, you know. I can't do it, you know.
Being at DCon about a week ago, it's like being able to sell my work to an artist or to a person that wants it. There's like, I have toys around me that we produce in the factory. And so it's like, I can't beat that. I can't beat that. Like, I'm chasing the dragon now.
Yeah, no. I don't know. You're talking to, I'll definitely reflect on what you're saying. Is so I'm obsessed with process as an artist. Like I love doing it, but I'm really obsessed with that completion of the sale. You know, I have that balance of you know artist business, and ultimately you want that in someone's hands, and it's addiction to the sale, not even necessarily about the financial. You know, I whatever the number is, you know, it's you know, man, someone's super passionate about this thing I created and they're engaged with it. And like, that's it for an artist. Yeah. Like you've done it, you know what I'm saying? And I think that's the professional hobbyist, like completing that last part of the artist, the figure's journey to the customer, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, face-to-face sales, being at those conventions. Oh man. To me, that's my best vibe, you know, like
it's unbeatable.
I love setting up my figures on a table. Come talk to me. Let me tell you about it. Let me show you.
Yeah.
Pick it up, turn it around, you know. These things need to kind of be handled a little bit to really appreciate, because they're 3D objects, you know.
Yeah.
Me showing you a picture is only going to translate so much of really what it is.
Right. Yeah. I got to ask first and foremost, before anything, your name is Mecha Virus. What is that? What are we doing?
Yo, okay. So Mecha Virus was like, is what I do. But over the years, people just started calling me Mecha Virus, right?
Yeah.
So initially, it all goes back to like, you know, Mecha Godzilla and like,
yeah,
having that kind of robot aesthetic. And like, it was, you know, a lot of the steampunk stuff was kind of floating around, you know, like 20 years ago and like the tubes. And I was trying to think of some kind of concept where I could apply this custom aesthetic to a multitude of figures, but without, you know, trashing what the original figure kind of had going on. You
yeah.
know, you want to pay respect to both aspects. And so I started playing with this like found object wire vacuum tube kind of process and kind of sculpting it on and really trying to incorporate it into the whatever piece I'm customizing. And like I said, I started calling that like the Mecha Virus. It's a virus that can infect any kind of creature, figure, whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know when it started, but people just were like, it's Mecha Virus, you know? So,
yeah.
So I was like, that's pretty awesome. I'm just going to go with it. That's, you know, who I'm going to be, because it's really what I'm doing. Again, it's kind of like the process. I became the process, you know. It's like, that's where my like real obsession is like making something. And it was so, so intricate and dedicated to that thing that it became me, you know? And I could say Todd Robertson, and they're like, okay, cool. Who's that? But Mecha Virus,
yeah.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah, I know that. I've seen that. Which is pretty cool, you know, but yeah, that's kind of how it all developed and kind of came to birth. I'll just jump real quick. Sorry to babble, but
no, this is what it's for.
One of the first collaborations, the early ones I did was with Bob Kanji, Placebo Toys.
Mm-hmm.
I think he kind of retired. He's not been around as much, but he was really wanted backstories and development to what we were doing as like a collaboration. So I had to come up with like a pretty extensive story. If you go look, you could probably dig it up. It's probably buried somewhere. But it really made me own what Mecha Virus was. And then that's like, it kind of, it's like its own character, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, if you look back, there's definitely some funny, early like creative writing aspects to like the Mecha Virus story that I don't know if I'd go back and do so much of that, but I think it was really important at the time because he wanted it to be a special collaboration that meant something, and we could show the collectors like, hey, we put a lot of thought into this, developed the idea, and it's connected, and it makes sense. Like, it's not just like throwing a bunch of found objects on a piece of plastic, you know. This is like two merging characters developed,
yeah,
you know, and thought through to like a lot of reason, you know. But yeah, that's some Mecha Virus right there,
yeah,
you know.
Hey, so build me Todd as a person. Walk me back to childhood. Tell me about the cartoons we're watching, the toys we're collecting. What has informed this person that's sitting in front of me?
Again, early on, I feel like I was heavily involved in, you know, always artistic, kind of was a little more musical early on.
Mm-hmm.
So even up until like early college, I did not complete college. I was doing music and audio engineering and thinking that that might be the road.
Yeah.
Not as much, you know, visual art. And I'll be honest, like my transition into to visual 3D art versus, you know, like a audio aspect of it or another medium was pretty like it just had to happen. I literally started selling some of my artwork on Newberry Street in Boston, and for years was kind of like that, like you know, I would sell prints and stuff to tourists, you know, and really work that angle. I'd have some originals, I'd have some prints. I had my space lined out. I had my hacker's license, you know, and I was full on hustling on the streets, and it was awesome. I met a lot of people, got into some local galleries. It kind of stepped up over time. At the same time, I was focusing more on that 2D art. You had the emergence of like the DIY Monies and Dunnies and kind of Western vinyl. And I saw a lot of that heavy customization of toys and bringing in some of my background deeper. I was always a model builder. My father has a model train layout in the basement when we
Heck
were a
yeah.
kid. So it was always like, again, like a combination of process and then, you know, focused to creating something more like 3D scale wise or, you know, in that realm. So I started to be like, okay, cool. There's a world where I can merge, you know, a toy model aspect with like a 2D art aspect, right? And then it was kind of just, it was game over from there. You know, the more I fell into that groove, it just felt more natural and more natural. And I think that some people, it's like younger artists, you're going to stumble through some different mediums, but like, you'll know when you find your medium, it's just like, there's no doubt in your mind. It's just like, this is what I do. I'm going to apply it start to finish and things are done. And it, you know, like, for example, like in my hobbyist end and my personal end, like I like to build models,
mm-hmm.
like, I'll tinker with them forever. They never get finished. You know what I'm saying? But me making an art kaiju figure, there's a full plan and vision that start to end in my head. It's like, there's no hang up, you know, it's not going to kind of, I'm not going to noodle around. I'm going to, I see the finished vision, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very easy to kind of get there. You don't like lose steam halfway through the marathon. You know what I mean? It's like, you get halfway through and you're going faster because you're getting more excited because you can start to see it like, all right, I've got over the hard parts. It's like, I'm almost there.
Yeah. Tell me about that model kit that your dad had, because there's no way as a kid that you saw that model train set and didn't want to just like either play with it, pretend you're Godzilla, all the things. And he probably was like, don't touch it.
No, I respected what it was. I don't know why I had a weird like upbringing of like respect for objects and like kind of, you know, look touch with your eyes kind of vibe, you okay. know, like to keep your hands in your pocket, you know. My yeah. parents were like not super strict, but they showed me a lot of respect for things. And I don't know, I mean, it was just to me like trains were never my thing, but I always liked the like, it was cool, you know. I mean, he literally had like half the basement he was doing S gauge, if y'all train guys out there, it's like a size, you know, it's like a specific size. The kaiju stuff for me, I'll be honest, I've never been like a crazy collector. I kind of like had to make choices of where I wanted to like invest to take my direction, and it kind of maker was more my road. And you know, like I want to buy a ton of paint and try to be a customizer, you know?
Yeah.
I want a paint collection, you know? So the kaiju stuff, like I would get into that watching the 24-hour, you know, all weekend kaiju marathons on like cable back in like when you were a young kid. And I mean, I was always obsessed with Ghidorah, you know, Godzilla. Like there were certain characters that just, as an artist, like they kind of applied to some of my artistic vision and kind of always kind of mushed around some toys as kids, obviously. G.I. Joe, I had some of the Star Wars, you know, like I'm an Empire, I'm the Empire Strikes Back, like era type vibe, you know. I wasn't that first wave, you know. I was thinking you were going to ask this. So, like, a cool toy that I always thought was super rad back in the day was, like, do you remember the Centurions? There was, like, a green one and a blue one. And I remember literally, like, begging my mom. You know, like, shouts to my mom. My mom is, like, helped me so much with this thing. And shouts to my wife, too. Two of the best women there. But she got me this Centurion figure and drove out after work. And, like, thinking back, I was, like, dude, now I'm adult. Like, there was no way she wanted to do that. She wanted to go home and, like, relax. But she got this figure, and it was, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was, like, that was one cool, like, license that, you know, so much you could pick up and go back and visit. But, yeah, those Centurions were cool. I had to, you know. Yeah, I don't know. A little bit of all of them, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy.
All those 90s vibes.
I do think about that. Like, how often – because I work with teenagers now, my immediate thought is like, in the midst of doing all the stuff, I would for sure make the effort to go get something from a store for them or something. But like as a kid, that like that's a conscious choice I've made now. As a kid, I had no concept of like, mom, I just want this thing. Like, can you? And it's almost like, mom, stop being lazy from your 12-hour shift of wherever you're working and go get me my thing.
Yep.
That and I can't believe I ever would ask things like that as a kid.
Yeah, so I think it's like pretty good investment now, you know what I mean? Like I can look back and be like, that trip like kind of inspired me to like make some kind of artistic career out of it, you know?
Yeah, when did art kind of pick up for you? Like when did art just start sitting in? Because you already had the like possible model kits, the model train set around you. So you saw those types of things.
I want to say it was like I go back to like when I started selling on the like, you know, like a street vendor style. It really snowballed from there. And I linked up with restaurant owners that liked some of my stuff. You know, like I would sell inexpensive stuff on the street, but if you linked up and wanted to do a bigger commission, we really stepped it up. And so, I mean, I was doing this full time. It was like crazy. It was like, people say like, you know, day to day, week to week, it was like hour to hour hustle. You know what I mean? Like you just couldn't stop and get off the wheel. It was so intense, but I eventually linked up with some galleries.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big local gallery here for a while that was open called Lot F Gallery. And I actually was represented by them for a while. So I was literally doing, you know, like a big show there, you know, every few months or a group show every month, a combination of, you know, custom toys, paintings, you know, all sorts of weird artistic mixed media kind of creations. I also did the whole One Up in Japan had this series going called the Pandemonium series, which is like a monthly themed custom series. So every month they would have a theme, you know, like February would be sweets. So you'd have to create a custom with this sweets theme in mind. And oh my God, I think I did a show every month with this series for like almost 2 years straight. Like it was crazy. And, you know, that was kind of the wheel that I was on for a while, was doing a lot of those, you know, combination of the show circuits, combination of like some gallery stuff, some restaurants.
Yeah. That is crazy to like
sidetracking.
No, that's good. That's good. You're vending, you're doing those things. So you start in this customization, which is like early on doing that stuff with those toys and customizing. What are the things that they would commission you for bigger pieces or bigger runs or whatever?
Oh, it's always the Becca stuff.
Okay.
I'll be honest, you know, people see that, and whether it's a collector that wants to add something or to their collection that, you know, is a little more unique, or another artist that's like, I want you to try to apply that to my piece, you know?
Yeah.
Cause they see that I've been doing that for a while. So I think it's, It's been a, you know, thank you for everyone that's like reached out and wanted to work with me. I could, such an honor, that people let me do it. I do. I mean, there was a point in time where it wasn't accepted, you know, like customizing actual Japanese Sofubi toys was like, you don't do that, you know? And yeah. I kind of went on a whim. I'll be honest, you know, like I really just, I said, I'm just going to go for it and hope for the best. And, like was really just kind of like blessed into being allowed to do it. And once I kind of got some approval from some other kind of bigger artists, you know, like Mark Nagata, for an example, it was like, all right, let's ramp this up. Let's keep going, you know? And then also too, to always have like I go back to the fact that, you know, you mentioned the paint job stuff. Like I don't have a wide range of my own line yet, right? Yeah. That's the process. So I had to make sure that, you know, if you're gonna work with me, I want to make sure that there's something special. Like, you know, I want a paint job that, you know, I use a special high gloss clear coat. You know, I kind of like that wet look, you know.
Yeah.
I want to add something to it that's not readily out there, you know. There's amazing painters that, you know, self-makers that can do the whole run themselves. And it's like, you know, why would they want to work with some other people? So I really want to provide something that's going to contribute to that, you know, as well as like working artistically also for the collectors, you know, you want them excited.
Yeah.
To kind of like have something very, very special and unique.
I mean, we've talked about the layers and stuff of factory work and the layers that kind of go into making your own toy. And you've made stuff.
Yeah.
Tell me what made you jump from customization to making your own, like what sparked you to make your own stuff? And then tell me about that process.
Oh, I just, you know, if you're going to be a toy maker, you got to have, I always wanted a little combination of both. You got to have your own pieces in production. Early on, I was kind of going back and forth to Japan. I was lucky enough to get linked up with Yajima-san from Dream Rockets. And he facilitated doing my wax work and getting, you know, set up on joints, set up on molds. And he kind of... helps middleman some the ordering of that now for me. But like I'll be honest, like it's a very small figure. It's nothing too complicated. You know, if you've seen Amanito, it's just a two-piece figure, but it's mainly like a big chunk, you know.
Yeah.
It had to go through two steps of wax, you know, it got rejected by the mold guy the first time, it had to go back. Thank God, again, Yajima, Dream Rockets number one, you know, he was able to masterfully figure out how to kind of manipulate the wax the first time to appease the mold maker to get through that next step, you know, and we got that done. But it was like shocking to me as a young maker to be like, wow, this is like so much more complex than initially I thought. There's a lot of pieces. You know, at the time, like we didn't have all these access to Google Translate and the phones and Wi-Fi. So we're doing this like with translators.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very, it was crazy. And now it's like.
We interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
You know, you can reach out to these factories via DM through Instagram and in a vast different countries in Asia and get a very high quality figure. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's like the biggest thing, like I said earlier, that's like just shocking. You know, it's like, man, like you could really make these things happen. you know, like you have to really commit if like you want to go through certain roads of production, to maybe a lengthier process, or, you know, having the challenges of getting through each kind of phase, without as many hurdles or hiccups, you know. But yeah, Amanito was, whew, that was a commitment right there, you know. I had to move the mold from factory to factory. It just like it never ended, you know.
It's in a
good place now, so I'm very thankful. But yeah, I think, you know, any kind of production, it's like be ready, you know. It's going to be a little bumpy, but like just ride it, just keep going, you know. Yeah. don't get discouraged, and like whatever, if all else fails, you know, just start over, like whatever, if that's it, it just wasn't meant to be. And like it's never done until you have that box of vinyl at your doorstep, you know. So
yeah, tell me what year when you first make this toy.
2013.
Okay, so like even in the jump from 2013 to 2025, there's less ways to communicate with these factories and translation and all that stuff. I mean, it is pretty easy now. If you can find a factory you like and you want to work with, it's pretty easy to stay on it and work with them, and they're pretty responsive. I mean, having the middleman kind of do that for you, did that make it easier for you? Like, when did you, have you done it yourself where you're like the point person reaching out to these factories?
I mean, yes, I had someone that helped me for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it transitioned to, you know, I had to kind of go direct to somebody. But it with you know, especially kind of Japan, you're kind of, you need a middleman. Like, absolutely. I'm not there. It's a different kind of ordering system and style than maybe a Chinese factory. So like you kind of need someone to kind of take care of it, whether you know, whether it be a local or another foreigner there, you know. I think you have a wide range of options now, even taking that road, if you reach out and make the connections. But yeah, I always had somebody that, you know, definitely could speak the language and definitely middleman that from step to step. I think some of the, you know, different newer factories now in other countries other than Japan, you're going to get more of a package, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can send them a file and, you know, this is what I want. And here, you know, they're going to go all the way almost through packaging on some of them, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not exactly what you may or may not get with some arrangements, you know, elsewhere. So, like I said, Amanito was, I kind of felt more like, you know, that old school kaiju hobbyist Japanese road, you know. There's like, yeah, that core of guys, you know. They may or may not do it full time. Some of them do, some of them don't, but it's like they were doing, you know, like Bloppus, you know, Dream Rockets, Yamamark, you know, like all that kind of crew. That's like the style I wanted to kind of emulate. So it was like, I was so lucky to fall into the bag with them. Something else I want to mention, just because you were talking, you got me thinking about massive changes. I guess big shout out to the Vinyl Wonder Paint. Like,
yeah,
another like crazy game changer. You know, like I guess you could get the Mad Ape Ninja and Monster color we had back, you know, 10 years ago, but not even close, man. You know what, yeah, I mean? It wasn't even, not even the same. And oh, you could get your V color, you know, if you had certain connections, or you could get it over through customs. But it was a never ending, like finding something that could be sturdy and durable enough to kind of be a more high end, like artistic item and stay on the vinyl, you know?
Yeah.
So like, it's amazing now that as an artist here, like we have a great line of colors and options that like actually do what they're supposed to do. And we can have that traditional style of finish if you want. You can gloss it up if you want. I think that that's like a pretty big step for us at home, you know, like state-wise, domestically.
Yeah.
Like we have a stateside vinyl paint company and, you know, stateside vinyl production. Like you come back, you're like, when did everything come here? I mean, that's like, the other big one too, you know, those two things. But yeah, great paint. I love it. That's like, you know, as a painter, when you get back in the game and you're just like, I got like a whole new car to like spin around on the block in, you know, and all these new colors and like, they all work phenomenally, and I've been beyond impressed. I don't know. I'm coming up with great paint apps here. Just say, you know, it's hand in hand. If I have the tools that I need to do what I need to do, like my process is only going to get easier and better. So yeah. Definitely high quality paint. Really love that Vinyl Wonder.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
Not only is there like, because I've heard tale of FOK.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say FOK, too. I didn't want to get all badly, but yeah, that's the other one.
And I've heard that, like, how, like, if you can, that's the one to get your hands on if you can somehow get it here. I think what's crazy is even in the short amount of time, like, Mile High Sifubi in Colorado, who's doing vinyl pulling here, and you have a bunch of other places that either have done it or are starting up, and it is wild to see that that's like moving here. What's funny is in every aspect, in every single one of those places, the thing that they still ship out for is the mold making.
Yep. Yeah.
That's we just cannot do it.
Dude, we'll get it. Like, I mean, like everywhere. I mean, like this is what I know as someone who returned to, you know, this community. And again, thank you guys so, so much for like accepting me and taking me back. Like, it's so scary, like leaving and then returning. You don't know how that's gonna, like, for years, you know, like, hey, I'm a ghost that just like rematerialized, you know? But with the mold making thing, it's like the conversation we would have had 10, 15 years ago is we'll never make anything here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we can't even get paint, right? Now we have an amazing paint option. Now we have pulling, you know? We're one step away. Someone's gonna crack that cheat code, or however you want to say it, you know? It may take a couple years, I mean, you know, but I stepped back and got a whole new perspective on like, oh, we'll never, you can't, you know? No, like things have been done that everyone said would never, never happen. And now I'm returning. I see everything, you know? So
yeah,
I have a lot of faith that I think sooner than later, we're going to have full on US, you know, traditional pulled vinyl production here and, you know, full on, you know, access to creating that kind of figure here. I think we're way closer than, you know, people may feel, you know.
I mean, it's going to shoot up the cost of vinyl for sure, because doing things here and producing here is going to get more expensive. But I mean, if it's here, who knows? You took that break. What brought you back?
So I took like a, you know, obviously getting older, you wanted, I tried to kind of step off the artistic roller coaster, you know. Like, it is a lot of up and down. You got to commit. There's no guarantee. The only guarantee in the art thing is if you do nothing, you'll get nothing, right? I can guarantee, right? So, but, like, you could put in a ton of work for a show and...
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now sponsor Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
You know, like the stars just might not align and like, you know, it gets a little rough. So I kind of was always lucky to bear through the storm, but Getting a little older, I got married, wanted to try some different things. I took a little segue into corporate cannabis, you know. Total, you know, it had artistic aspects and passion aspects, you know. For example, like, you know, you either know your product or you don't. And if you don't know it, like, it's clear at that game. But, yeah, like, coming from an artist background, like, I didn't know nothing about this corporate world, man. You know, it was like, it was learning so much about how to actually kind of structure a business and how things operate and efficiency. And like, no one's teaching artists how to like figure that stuff out. Like data sheet upon data sheet, you know, I managed post-harvest. So I basically cut the plant out and had to, you know, run a team to process that material all the way into packaging. So
holy hell, that's a long process.
Oh, I mean, it's the same as artists, though. It's a process. And like, you just have to commit it to it. You've got to see it through. And then you got to do it again. You know what I mean? It's just rinse, wash, repeat, you know? But I learned how to, you know, like really assess what you're doing. You know, like I had to make sure my team members were X amount of items per hour type scenario, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like going back to this now, I'm like, okay, if I'm taking too long on something or it's taking longer than I anticipated, you know, then maybe the price needs to reflect that, you know, or if the end goal is to have something that is in a certain price range and I got to have it done in this kind of this period, like treating the art more as like a real business, you know. How much does the paint cost per toy? You know?
Yeah.
Things like that that you never really looked at. I personally never looked at earlier. Obviously you take track of like main things, but I was kind of like not like super on point with like a lot of that stuff. And so I think going forward now it's okay, like what is the reality of like you're saying the cost of the vinyl is gonna go up.
Yeah.
You know? My wife literally screamed at me a little bit, you know, being like, you know, you're living 10, 15 years ago, you know, the power bill for us to run our equipment to paint these toys is far more than it used to be, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of like, I guess the sad state, you know, I mean, it is what it is, but I think that we all kind of, you know, we put a lot of work. It's like, you know, as someone who's gone the hamster wheel a couple of times, I think reflect on what you need to make that worth your time, because if you're not, you're gonna get so fried and so burnt, and it's you're always chasing yourself, you know.
Yeah.
So you know, but yeah, that would be my two cents for like new people trying to put it together, you know.
Yeah, I do see that a lot when you go to like shows or something. You see people the hard part is like everyone's either artist minded or you're business minded, but in order to do this, you've got to be a little bit of both. And I struggle with that myself of like, I get too business minded too quickly of like, I need this much money. I need this to do this. I need, instead of like having fun with art.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes bites me in the ass.
No, man, like you're looking at it the wrong way. All right. So I've seen what you guys were doing before I jumped on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really respect the business people, right? Like you, people that are artistically based need people that are business based and vice versa. And it's just a matter of admitting what you want, you know? Sometimes I feel that you have people on either end that want to go the other way, and it's like, just you're the artist, just be the artist, or you're the business guy, just own that, you know. And like, if you get that dynamic and balance happening, I mean, that's when great companies are formed, you know. And it's like, those are great collaborations. And I think it's, you know, you know taking that business end are going to make this thing a little more sustainable long term. So like, even if us artists are kind of, you know, wiggling around and making it a seat of the pants style, we're always going to have some kind of like business minded mindset to kind of return to or kind of play around, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I like one of my this gallery, Lot F Gallery, I worked with for years, you know, the gentleman who ran the gallery, he was very business minded, but it was like, by him focusing on helping get those sales and taking that pressure off in that kind of situation, it gave me like the world open to create, you know, and really push myself without worries that there'd be an industry for me to reinsert these pieces into, you know? So again, I don't know. I think you got to just embrace what it is and you know, yeah. Help these artists out, man. If you got the leads, do you want to take the realm, you know? Just make it happen. You know, like, put some paperwork down, you know? Put that real bring that, like, professional, higher level, you know, professionalism to some of this, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like, my wife comes from, like, a very high-end corporate world, you know? And she's like dumbfounded on how we all work our business dealings and operate this kind of industry. It's kind of a wild west, you know?
Yeah, it's all handshake, and I hate that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. You know, like, you can quickly see where someone stands and what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and we're able to kind of look through, you know, Instagram, for example. You can check someone's portfolio, you know, and we can ask around. But yeah, at the end of the day, someone who's a high level business sense, this is crazy town,
yeah.
You know, like, so I think that, you know, I'm definitely noticing that we're transitioning more to like, you know, a higher level working industry with like, you know, which I think is going to give us a lot more stability, you know, yeah. Like, you'll see those molds. We're going to get mold making in America. I feel it. That's where, you know. That stability, yeah. That's what we're going to get, you know, like, let's just keep it. Let's get to that next phase. And then we're there, you know,
being back in the toy scene after a hiatus. What was it like jumping back in and doing customs again? Was it like trying to reach out to certain people to start making those connections again? What was that like for you?
No, like I said, I'm so thankful that there's such like a tight community here, and I chose to do it. I posted, you know, like a, you know, like a picture of the airbrush, you know, like I'm coming back, I something just to show everyone I'm jumping back in. And the response was crazy. Like, I was blown away. Like, this is nuts, you know, like,
yeah.
And that like alone just fueled me like, man, I'm going, you know? I was working for a while in an industry that I love, I liked but and loved, but was not like my real passion, you know. And then I got laid off, and then I didn't know where I was going again, and it kind of just pulled me back in. And the community was so accepting to kind of help me just kick that next step in.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not gonna take that for granted. Like, if y'all want me here, I'm gonna give you my best, you know. And Like I said earlier too, like, it feels so right to me. Like I love doing this stuff so much. Like, I love painting. I love gluing all these parts. I love seeing when it's done and the clear coat's dry, and I'm like, yes, I finally get to put this figure back together. And like,
yeah,
like just look at it, and I'm like, yeah, like this is cool, man. You know, like, I know that's maybe like kind of like silly, but like, if you don't like what you're doing, you're going to like get burnt out real quick and just not be happy. But, you know, this is like, just is it for me, man. You know, like, I want to paint these toys. I want to like this year, I really want to focus on developing more original characters, you know? And then, you know, obviously take those and reverse kind of apply the paint jobs, the mecha, you know, but yeah. It'll all be more eternalized within my universe, you know. Obviously, I always feel I'm gonna want to do customs and collaborations. Like, it's just, I've just developed that is such a core part of like what I really like to do. And I'm like, spinning off your earlier question, I'm lucky enough to have a lot of artists reach out to me, you know, like, hey, can, do you want to do something together? And I mean, I'm usually always down, you know, I don't know if I've ever like not wanted to do it, you know, I'm like so excited. Like, wow, I can't believe some of these people want me to like get crazy with their stuff, you know, like, so again, I'm just like very grateful, very thankful that like, there's such an awesome community out there, like that love this stuff, you know, it's like,
you know? That is crazy. This community is so rad. I mean, the next thing that we always talk about is like, what's next for the artist? And tell me about these next toys or this next IP that you want to bring to life or these next ideas.
Oh, I guess is it okay? So I'll get a little whatever into it. So I want to develop this small line called the Watchers.
Okay,
and they're gonna be like a hybrid of kind of like a, you know, a humanoid facial kind of features with some like classic retro robotic features.
Okay.
No mecha virus on them, but then have the ability that these figures would be, you know, one off into that realm. They're going to be like designed so that I can do special work to them. You know what I'm saying? But I've got like a couple of like, you know, two or three watchers, you know, watcher one, two, three. So that's kind of like the universe I want to start to create. They're going to be like these kind of like a mecha virus, like trans-dimensional kind of like accumulatory creature, you know, so I can adapt a lot of styles, you know, zoning around that retro kind of sci-fi robotic aesthetic.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's where I want to really introduce that. And I don't know for sure. It's going to be a combination of hopefully maybe, you know, some overseas production factory pieces mixed in with some DIY, you know, Sofubi and resin. I'm starting to accumulate some equipment. You know, I literally just ordered the low temp salts today. So
yeah,
hopefully in a couple of weeks, we're going to start some experiments here and just see what we can do, you know? And then, you know, I don't know, just hopefully like create some like new, awesome kind of mixed media pieces that kind of fit into that new universe over the next year.
Dude, I can't wait to see it, especially with your paint stuff. Holy moly. The last part of the podcast is always about the artist plugging everything they've got going on, how they people can get in touch with you, work with you, all those things. So please, please plug away.
So my main place is Instagram at MechaVirus. DM, just I'm always readily available. I usually respond very rapidly. So any artist, anybody looking for commissions, if you go there, there's also a link to my shop. I just dropped this kind of online solo project called Reconstructed that I just finished.
Yeah, you did.
It's kind of just like, I just wanted to do a big body of work and present it in kind of just like one chunk rather than a bunch of small releases. So kind of a format I'm going to play with too over the next year, you know, giving like a wider vision, you know, into a little prolonged period of time. So that's up there. If anyone, there's already been an awesome amount of traffic and purchases. So thank you. But if anyone wants to go check it out, it's all presented on the Instagram and then purchasing details, whatever, on the store. For what do we got for collaborations? Shout out to the Ophelia Toys. We just finished up a pretty awesome collab.
It's so sick.
Oh man, those coldons are so cool. I was so excited to like do those. So there's been a few figures I'm like, oh, that figure's so cool. And he reached out to me and like, again, I was so excited. I was like, oh man, I got so many things I want to do, you know? So we got those up. I got a box that might be on my doorstep right now. I'm going to go check after we've wrapped this up with Extra Truck Estriol.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing, we got some things cooking up. So I'm going to try to get that out in the next couple of weeks, I think, just to get it into that holiday mix. Beyond that, you know, there's some other projects cooking up. I don't want to reveal too much, you know, just in case they don't go all the way through, but there's some bangers. There's going to be some big things coming up this year. Like I said, I'm going to be focused on just kind of getting my personal, you know, universe developed, try to do some more, lean a little more artsy. You know, I wanted, you know, as an artist, when people are like, what's your medium? You know,
I say
mixed media, right? So I want, you know, resin, vinyl, found object. I want to make some truly art, toy, mixed media, sculptural projects, you know, that are, like, we could offer to customers, you know. But in a nutshell, yeah, that's kind of the direction over for 2026, you know, so.
Heck yeah. Keep pumping out those collabs. They are so good. Yeah.
And again, thank you so much for reaching out, man. I was so excited when you hit me up. Like, it's so rare. I feel that I really engage and speak up to anyone. You're usually just working by yourself.
Yeah.
So it's great. Your format is awesome. I guess shout out to you, man. You know, like, you're keeping, what do you got? Like, hundreds of podcasts, man. I was kind of blown away.
Yeah. 250 just came out, I think this week, or 251.
And shout out to you, and I'll end this here. Like, and I think this is a good note. You said something so awesome to me that is like I think one of the coolest lines I've heard in a while. Like, you said something in one of your podcasts, you're somebody's Banksy.
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, damn, like, this dude is so spot on. So like, that line alone, I was like, man, whoever thinks that I might be someone's Banksy, I cannot let them down, you know? So props to you, man. Like, keeping us going, highly inspirational. I really appreciate it. Respect it.
Dude, thank you so much for coming on.